The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Jimmy Kimmel seems like a pretty likable guy. I mean, I've laughed at some of the segments on his late night show, but he's been getting more and more political on his jokes and on his show lately, and he's caused an awful lot of attention. Yesterday, he was on CBS Sunday Morning, and here's what he had to say.
One conservative commentator in particular who says, who made Jimmy Kimmel the moral arbiter?
I'm not. I mean, I agree with him. I'm nobody's moral arbiter. I mean, you don't have to watch the show. You don't have to listen to what I say.
Okay. He might think that he's nobody's moral arbiter, but when he does these political monologues, he is presenting himself as one. It's the same thing that I do, Jimmy. And you know how you feel about me. Here's what annoys so many Americans. Comedians will present their political opinions as if it's the default position of the country. There's no nuance, no recognition that there are millions of potential viewers that really disagree with them.
Like 3 years ago, I was equally liked by Republicans and Democrats, and then Republican numbers went way down, like 30% or whatever. And, you know, as a talk show host, that's not ideal, but I would do it again in a heartbeat.
Okay. So if I was ABC, I would call Jimmy and remind him that his job is to try to get as many viewers as possible, so alienating a chunk of the audience is bad for business. When he abandons comedy for serious diatribes on politics, he's not doing his job. The other thing is, it ignores and annoys half of the country. If people want politics, they'll watch another channel. They'll watch, you know, a show like this, or they'll go someplace where they expect it. How many of us, left and right, just want to laugh?
So you don't mind if Republicans turn off your show? They're not watching anymore?
I don't say I don't mind. I mean, I love for everyone. I want everyone with a television to watch the show. But if they're so turned off by my opinion on healthcare and gun violence, then I don't know. I probably won't want to have a conversation with them anyway.
Good riddance?
Well, not good riddance, but riddance.
This is the most important thing that he said. I probably wouldn't want to have a conversation with them anyway. How many times are we going to hear this in our society? Because that's the takeaway. Not that he's saying something, you know, about guns or healthcare or anything else. Not that he's losing audience or gaining others. That he says, if you disagree with me, I probably wouldn't want to have a conversation with you anyway. Kimmel can have all the political opinions he wants. And because of his celebrity, he'll have the opportunities to talk about them. These late night hosts might be surprised how much of the audience would just really appreciate them for doing their job on not pissing me off at the end of the day and just making us all laugh and come together as Americans.
Monday, October 16th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
It doesn't seem like anybody cares anymore. George Lopez booed off the stage for juvenile diabetes in Denver last week. He did an anti-Donald Trump routine. It didn't go over really well with the crowd. The tables sold for $5,000 to $100,000 to benefit the Barbara Davis Center for Diabetes. And George was asked nicely, this is according to the event, George was asked nicely to stop making Trump jokes by a man in the front row who just donated $250,000. But George didn't. He continued and got booed. Here it is.
Listen, it's about the kids. All right? I apologize for bringing politics to an event. This is America. It still is. All right? So I apologize to your white privilege, but yes. No. If I was a minority in Denver, I'd be upset too.
Wow.
I got you.
Wow. I apologize for your white privilege. Thank you for changing my opinion on old white men, but it doesn't change the way I feel about orange men. So what is happening here? What is happening here is what has happened before. And one of the things that I have warned against and been worried about, honor, courage, love. Those were the three events that we did as we prepared for these times. Honor, have honor, know what is true, know what is most important. God is most important. Never dishonor yourself. Stand for the truth. Next, with courage. Have the courage, because times are going to get tough and you're going to feel awfully alone. And people are going to say horrible things and do horrible things. And you have to have the courage to remember and stand in honor. And love. The only way to protect yourself from the hate that is coming is love, empathy, seeing one another, hearing one another, listening to one another. We're not doing that. How many people that you know truly have honor? How many people do you know that are willing to and have demonstrated, if you haven't demonstrated in your own life yet, that you will stand against the mob, you will take on your own side, because there's no way any of us, left or right, agree with everything that left or right has done. If you're not looking, if you're on the left, and you're not seeing Antifa, and you're not seeing people excuse that, and you don't look at them and say, excuse me, these guys are not on our side. They scare the hell out of me. If you haven't taken on your own side yet, then perhaps you don't know what honor is, or you don't have courage. And if you're not concerned about the hatred, then I don't know what will start to concern you on that. What made America great? Well, a couple of things. De Tocqueville said what made America great is that America was good. Are we good anymore? Are we? Do you remember when Americans used to look like Puritans? We were mocked around the world because we were Puritans. Are we Puritans anymore? I saw an ad last night for Emirates Airways, and it was fascinating to watch. Most people, I bet, won't even notice it. But all of the women were completely covered, not in hijabs or anything like that, just had long sleeves. And the shorts came down to their knees. At one point, it shows a beach and a woman laying on the beach, and she's got like a robe on her. and she runs towards the water in her robe. I watched that and I said to my son, wait a minute. Go back. Watch this. Notice the women. He said, wow, Dad, what does that mean? I said, that is to not offend the sensibilities of their home nation and the Muslims around the world. It's a Muslim airline. So they are coming into our culture. They have to change their ads and try to appeal to us, but they're the Puritans. There wouldn't be a single ad that would look like that. And it wouldn't stand out. Most people would never even notice it. But that wouldn't be made here. Nobody would even consider that. As Donna Karan said last week, look at the way they're dressed. Donna Karan, really? Have you looked at your own fashion? Have you looked at how you dress the models? Have you ever tried to go and buy modest clothes for your children, for your daughters? Have you ever done that? It's almost impossible. And why is that market? Why is that market so untapped? Because no one listens to each other. One side just assumes that they're right and that everyone is like that. And if they're not like that, well, there's something wrong with them. And so you're just in the dustbin. You have to go shopping wherever you can find clothes that are modest. This is now happening in everything in our life. On television, they don't care about you anymore. And so what do? We get mad at people like George Lopez. I get mad at him because of his arrogance. Is there any humility, George? Any humility? After Donald Trump won, I spent a long time with the left begging them, don't do what I did. And what was that? I told the truth as I saw it. Yes, I did. And there, I'd do that again. But I also lacked a certain sense of empathy for half of the country. And I didn't speak to them, nor did I listen to them. And so, and not because of me, but because of all of us on both sides, we've gone into our camps and we're not listening. And so what happens if you don't listen, if you don't talk, you become us versus them. Somehow or another, we're dehumanized. And you know this is true. Look at what CBS, look what one of the executives at CBS said about all the people at the country concert in Las Vegas. As if we're not even human. What happens when you have a society like this? One side wins and puts the other side into a camp. That's what happens. I can't say it's going to happen here, but that's what happens historically. You dehumanize the enemy. You make them the problem. It gives you, it cuts all of your ties emotionally to them as people. We can't play into this anymore. Instead of being mad at Jimmy Kimmel, I would beg Jimmy Kimmel to reconsider. I would beg Jimmy Kimmel to talk to us, to listen to us, and to realize that we're going to disagree. But what's your end game, Jimmy? We either live with each other and we tolerate each other and we give each other the space, or what? There's a lot going on today, and it's not all this heavy. But there are some changes that are happening around the world, including in Austria, which I don't think anybody was paying attention. A party that was started literally by a former SS officer now has 30% of the government. The uber scary Nazi right and the uber scary communist left is rearing its head. So what are we going to do about it? We are either going to join them because we feel there's no beating it, unless we become like them, or we return to our roots and come together as Americans and solve this together. The Equifax breach that impacted 143 million consumers just got bigger. They've now added 2.5 million people to the list. And if that's not bad enough, Yahoo announced that their breach impacted 3 billion user accounts. That's triple the original estimate. I don't know if you heard this over the weekend. If you've ordered a pizza from Pizza Hut, Pizza Hut has now been hacked. And the credit card numbers from Pizza Hut is now out. Your personal information, once it's out, once it's exposed, it's out. And identity thieves can buy your information on the dark web for months and even years, and they can use it to commit crimes in your name. They can steal from your 401k. The time to protect yourself is right now. LifeLock has never been more important than it is now. They use proprietary technology to help detect a wide range of identity theft. And if there is a problem, somebody here in the U.S., a restoration specialist, is going to work to fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock can help you see the threat before it hits you or immediately after and help stop it. Go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. That's Beck for 10% off your LifeLock membership. LifeLock.com. Use the promo code Beck and save 10% right now.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So where do we go from here? Well, one thing that our politicians need to understand is it's in their hands. It is in their hands, and somebody better wake up. Ted Cruz seemed to be awake this weekend. Here's what he had to say about 2018.
Look, the reason people are so unhappy, they're ticked off. We've got Republican control of every branch of government, and we're not delivering. You know, if senators don't want to see those kind of challenges, there's an easy solution to that. Let's do what we said we would do. Let's deliver on tax cuts and repealing Obamacare. If we get that done, I'm a big believer good policy is good politics. We'll have a terrific 2018 election year if we cut taxes, repeal Obamacare, and the economy booms. If we don't get any of that done, 2018 could be a bloodbath. We control our own fate. Deliver results.
He's completely right.
He's right.
And we've said this a million times. There's, you know, we've had criticism for the president. But I mean, the reason why Obamacare is repealed is not because it has anything to do with the president. The reason why Obamacare isn't repealed is because the Republican Congress could not hand him any piece of legislation at all, any of which he'd sign, as he was pretty clear about.
Yeah, I'd sign anything.
Yeah, he'll sign any of these things. Yep. They could have done a skinny repeal, a fat repeal, a normal repeal. Any of these things he would have signed.
Any of it.
And they couldn't deliver any of them. Not a small little bill that just dissected it. It took bad pieces out. Nothing. They gave him nothing to sign. And, you know, Cruz is right on this. If they can pass these things and the effects of the policies are as good as we would hope they would be, then they're going to have no problem in these elections. But if they do nothing and things are bad...
2018 yeah. is going to be a Republican ghost town.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hey, our heart goes out to those in California. And if you would like to get involved, mercury1.org, mercury1.org, to be able to help these people. That, you know, there are 400 people missing. 400 people are missing. The death toll is now starting to creep up to Vegas numbers, and it doesn't seem like anybody's really paying attention to this. And California, we want you to know you're in our thoughts and our prayers. And if you want to get involved and help California, you can go to mercury1.org. I'm wondering why we don't seem to connect with this California story. And and maybe perhaps it is Puerto Rico we saw as another country. People just don't see Puerto Ricans as American citizens. I hate that. I hate the fact that you have to be an American citizen, but I can't figure out why we don't care about the Puerto Rican story as much as we should. I mean, people without electricity at all, no phone service, nothing. That's horrible.
Yeah, and they are American citizens.
And they are.
Polls show something like 40% of Americans don't actually realize that. But yeah, they're American citizens,
right? And I don't think it's just that they're Americans that we don't know that they're American citizens. I'm not sure what it is.
Do you think it's natural disaster fatigue at all?
Could be,
because we had Harvey, Irma, Maria. The Puerto Rico thing obviously is in that. You have there are wildfires before the hurricanes and now the ones after.
So I think it's that, but I also think that people are sick of, they don't want to give to the Red Cross. You know, they just don't want to give. They don't try. How many people do you know? If you're involved in FEMA or the Red Cross, I want nothing to do with it.
There's definitely some of that. I mean, they have raised a lot of money.
Yeah, they have. They have.
And there was a huge reactions to things like Harvey, right? I mean, it's not like we've forgotten all natural disasters. It's just
what I'm thinking is that you can't really get involved over in Puerto Rico because it's an island. So we can't, you know, we don't have people from neighboring states going and driving there.
There's not a hands-on feel to it.
Correct. So yeah. There's no real hands-on feel to it. It's so massive that it's going to take the government to do something. And with California, I think that we look at California not as neighbors, but as a giant state. And I don't mean giant state like Texas is a giant state or Alaska is a giant state. I mean, it's statism. And so it's like an island. Here in Texas, nobody's going to stop you from getting a boat and going out. In California, you can't do anything because it's fires. So, you'll die. Mm-hmm. But also, is California even going to welcome that? Is the state going to let you do anything? I mean, you know what I mean? It's like I don't know. I don't know.
I do think there is an element of that, right? I mean, maybe, that is the philosophy of that area.
Yeah.
And this is, it's such a split area, too. We talk about this all the time. I mean, we were just looking at some stats of the business, and one of our big business parts of this, I can't remember if it was subscription or whatever it was. The biggest part of it is California.
Yeah.
There's a lot of real conservatives in California.
And they feel abandoned.
Who feel abandoned because there are real conservatives there, and then there are real far left people. And so, obviously, so far, they've held control of the state for most of the time and grown government to massive levels, too. I think there are a lot of citizens there who look at it as, this is always the government's job. There's nothing for me to do. I'll go along, do my life until something happens to me, and then the government will help me.
Right.
And that's obviously a different, totally different vibe than
Texas. And they just think differently in the in California, in the liberal regions. I mean, I saw what they did with Harvey Weinstein this weekend with the Oscars. Okay, so you kicked him out, but Woody Allen is still in.
Yeah, Woody Allen, who, by the way, was convicted. He was guilty. Who admitted he raped a 14-year-old.
No, no, not Woody Allen. You're thinking Woody Allen is the one who had pictures of his
daughter.
Oh,
I'm thinking daughter. Polanski.
Polanski.
Yeah. Sorry, I get all these wonderful Hollywood characters confused. Right, but Woody Allen's the same thing, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, Woody Allen, you know, had pictures of his underage daughter.
He
married his daughter, his adopted daughter. His other daughter said he molested her beginning at 7. Mm-hmm. And then his statement on this was, gee, I hope we don't outlaw winking. Winking?
That's a weird statement from him.
Hey, yeah. Woody. All right. Bizarre. And so let me play Corey Feldman, please. Here's Corey Feldman on Barbara Walters. Now, this is a few years ago. He was on The View, and he was talking about what's happening in Hollywood and how he and other child stars had been molested by men, very powerful men. Now, listen to this and listen to what Barbara Walters says.
Saying that there are people that were the people that did this to both me and Corey that are still working, they're still out there, and they're some of the richest, most powerful people in this business.
And they are.
And they do not want me saying what I'm saying right now.
Are you saying that they're pedophiles?
Yes.
And that they're still in this business?
Yes.
That's what you're saying in your book. When you talk to parents.
They don't want me here right now. Trust
Corey,
me. There
are a lot of parents out here who want to put their kids in this business. Their kids are cute. They're great actors. Da, da, da. What would you say to a parent who just has the best of intentions who's coming here with their child? Uh-huh. If you're saying that there's a lot of predators in this industry.
It's a many-feathered bird. Okay, be careful what you wish for. That's what I'll tell you. You know, don't go into it with naivety. Don't go into it thinking that it's all roses and sunglasses.
You're damaging an entire industry.
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to. I'm just trying to say that it's a very important, serious topic.
You said that there was one gentleman in the industry who did not take advantage of you. He was not a pedophile. You said that was Michael Jackson.
Of all people.
And she pushes back on behalf.
She pushes back on behalf of Hollywood. Mm. And we're living in this time where you have to believe the accusers. Well, no, you don't have to believe. You have to take them seriously and investigate. You take them seriously, but you don't have to believe them. She didn't even take them seriously. She turns around, you're destroying a whole industry. Well, that whole industry is really sick. I mean, we now know. I mean, who's the guy who is the producer that was having the hot tub parties with all of the young boys? Remember? That barely even made the news. Do you know that story? Somebody's got to remember. It's a Natasha, see if you can find it. It's a sick story about this guy in Hollywood who has had these hot tub parties for years and has lured boys over to his home.
And it's impossible to take them seriously. When you have Meryl Streep is coming out and saying, oh, well, I'm very offended about what Harvey Weinstein. First of all, you've been calling him God for years. Second of all, let's just say you didn't know anything about Harvey Weinstein. Let's just say.
I don't believe it.
We don't believe it at all.
I don't believe
but
it.
But let's just say she had no idea. She was praising Roman Polanski from stage multiple times. A guy who was convicted of raping a 14-year-old. He admitted he ran from the country to avoid prison time and has not been able to return. And you were still praising him. What credibility could you possibly have on this matter? Go away. You should. It's absolutely incredible that they think that they should be believable. And I guess it's because they're actors and actresses and they're supposed to be. They're going to claim now. They think they can convince anyone of anything.
Well, no. I mean, Hillary Clinton is doing the same thing. Did you see her on the BBC? She was on the BBC this weekend. Do we have this audio? She was on the BBC this weekend and she was saying, let's play cut one first. No regrets attacking Bill accusers. You have it, Sarah?
In your book, the three women brought onto stage by Trump attacking your husband, and you kind of dismiss them. Was that the right thing to do? Are you sure about that?
Well, yes, because that had all been litigated. I mean, that was the subject of a huge, investigation, as you might recall, in the late 90s. And there were conclusions drawn, and that was clearly in the past. But it is something that has to be taken seriously, as I say, for everyone, not just for those in entertainment right now.
Absolutely. Nobody wants to blame women for what men do. But nonetheless, powerful women like you also have a duty to call men out.
As I did throughout the campaign. Yeah. I certainly did. I mean,
but you didn't with your own husband.
The really sad part of the campaign was how this horrific tape, what he said about women in the past, what he said about women during the campaign was discounted by a lot of voters.
She went on to say, I didn't know anything about Harvey. I'd never even heard those rumors. Now, I don't believe that. I don't believe that. And here's why. We have seen too much evidence of too many people that were mauled by him. You are too close to Weinstein. I know people in the Clinton circles who worked for Weinstein, and they knew. You're telling me those people never warned you? They never said, really bad guy, really bad guy. Why would your people that used to work for you tell me about that and not you? I don't believe it for a second.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because is there... I read something from an employee of one of the companies, you know, off-the-record comment from one of the employees, and they said, look, we knew what we thought he was a guy who screamed at everybody and was a jerk.
Yes.
And a guy who, whenever he left, whenever he went on the road, was cheating on his wife.
That's different.
Right.
Hang on just a second. That's different than I've never heard these rumors. She said in the BBC article I never heard anything like this. That's different than, look, I heard that he was a philanderer, but I thought it was all consensual. She can't say that.
No.
She can't say that.
She's so dishonest.
So she has to go to, I never heard any of it, which is also a lie. I tell you, the day of the politicians is just over. I read a book this weekend. Hang on, I read this. Let me see if I can find it, because I don't know. I finished this damn novel, and I don't even know the name of it.
Hop on Pop?
Yes. Have you read that?
Yeah, because the guy is constantly jumping on Pop.
It was crazy, right?
Yeah, it's really good.
It's like, off Pop.
Yeah. Okay. I think they might make a movie out of that thing. So that is, it was powerful.
Robert Harris is a great writer, a great novelist, and he wrote a few years ago, Conclave, and it's all about the Pope dying, and there's some intrigue, and then what happens in the conclave to get the next Pope, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's so amazing to me that it doesn't matter if it's the conclave or if it's, you know, over in Europe or here, all politicians are exactly the same. They're exactly the same. But there is something different this time, and it's called the internet. We have the ability to connect with one another and connect with something real. And I don't know, it's not going to happen by 2018, but 2020, 2022, there's going to be a new breed of politician. It's just, they're going to be different because these politicians we've had enough of, in the entire world has had enough. And so if we don't go into communism or fascism, some sort of totalitarianism, Europe is moving in that direction rapidly. If we don't go into something like that, there's a chance that we survive by rooting all of these people out and not replacing them with just a better version of what we already have. I think we have a chance of changing this entirely, and people who don't feel like that smarmy politician, those are the people that I think we have a chance of possibly electing, because the entire system is broken. And once somebody figures out, here's how you here's how you go through the gate, or here's how you jump over the fence, I think those politicians are over. Nothing is more essential than protecting your home, but traditional home security can be a punishing and expensive task. There is a better way. Protect your home with SimpliSafe. Ask anybody who has been locked into a long-term security contract. They're on the hook for 3 years, plus the installation costs a fortune, and you're hardwired to a system that's, you know, tearing up your walls, and you don't even own it when you move. No, you're not. Nobody's paying extra for that. How much did you pay? SimpliSafe is a totally wireless security system, has no long-term contracts, no wires. Your home is protected around the clock, 24/7. There's no contracts, no hidden fees, nothing. The cost is $15 a month. That's three times less than the other guys, with no hidden fees. You own the system. Now, you can get it at a 10% discount right now. If you go to SimpliSafeBeck.com, you'll get a 10% discount, SimpliSafeBeck.com. But if you want the security system, you know, in your house tonight, you can have it. Just go to your local Best Buy. You'll have it up and running within 30 minutes. Whether that's you take it out of the box from Best Buy or you save the 10% and you get it on the website at SimpliSafeBeck.com. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So I'm having a hard time believing that people in Hollywood did not know about Harvey Weinstein. I mean, you may not have known that he was a rapist, but you knew he was a bad guy. When Courtney Love is on television saying this, I think in 2012, listen to this.
Hi, Comedy Central.
Do you have any advice for a young girl moving to Hollywood?
I'll get lively with that. When Harvey Weinstein invites you to a private party in the Four Seasons, don't go.
If Harvey Weinstein invites you, don't go.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So the Iranian nuclear deal, let me just say it this way. The most overly hyped and talked about piece of diplomacy in the history of overly hyped and talked about diplomacy ever. The Obama administration did everything in their power to convince us this deal was an absolute miracle delivered to us by God, that it was a product of some diplomatic genius, as if Obama channeled the ghost of Winston Churchill through John Kerry to wow the Iranians at the negotiating table, forcing them to bend to our will, pay no attention to those giant crates of cash on the tarmac at the airport. All that talk of this deal and the diplomatic move of the century was actually the equivalent of, Stu, correct me if I'm wrong, a 20-yard punt on first down.
That was a very good sports analogy.
Thank
you.
Appreciate it. Obama didn't want to have to deal with Iran, so all he did was he punted the football to another president. That's what the Iranian deal really is. It's an elaborate delay tactic that was overly hyped by an administration looking to build a legacy. On the campaign trail, Trump kept the hype train rolling by making the Iranian deal one of the talking points. Worst deal of all time. It's a bad deal, don't get me wrong. But the president has little to say in actually doing anything about it. That's the Senate. On Friday, Trump did what little he could do and announced he's going to decertify the deal when it comes up for review this week. Now, what does that even mean? Well, it means that Congress gets to decide whether to keep holding back sanctions or start them up again. Congress doesn't want to do that, even though constitutionally it's their job. Now, this may mean that Iran pulls out of the deal and all of that cash, all the stuff we gave to them was wasted. We got nothing in return. This master stroke of diplomacy allows Iran, by the way, to restart their nuclear program legally in 7 years. So it's a punt. They start it now. They start it in another 7 years. They're going to start it. Trump's biggest announcement Friday on Iran didn't have anything to do with the overhyped nuke deal. It came with his call to place the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps on the terror sanction list. Now, this move, above everything else, actually has the ability to curb Iran's behavior. The Iranian Guard is spread out all over the Middle East. Iran is using it to bend and reshape the region in its image. They command militias asserting control all over Syria, all over Iraq. Last night, these Iranian militias, along with the Iraqi government, used our hardware, as it always is, to invade the Kurd territory and seize one of their cities. The joint Iranian and Iraqi war on the Kurds has officially begun. But you're not going to hear about that today. One of our allies is under attack. All of the debate is going to be on the most overly hyped and talked about deal in modern history.
Monday, October 16th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I was at church yesterday, and a friend came up. I said, "How was your week?" She said, "Not good." My daughter tried to commit suicide on Friday. I don't know about your church, but mine is facing several in that net, that web. We are looking at a generation and people that are searching for meaning. I want you to listen carefully if you're one of these people. Because I consider myself one of these people. What really has meaning? What truly has meaning in your life? And how much of your day is spent on that? And how much of your day is spent on stuff that is really meaningless? How much of our day is spent on arguing? Or, I mean, I think it's almost like we're addicted to anger. We're addicted to the fight on something because it gives us meaning. It gives us purpose. It gives us something to fight for. Because we don't know what's real. We don't know really what's even happening to us. And what we're doing at the same time, we're fighting for these things. And we're struggling in our own self to find meaning. If we're lucky enough, we're old enough to have had some meaning in our life, have had something real in our life. Maybe we don't have it anymore, but we did at one point. And so we know it's possible. I think our youth, they don't even know it's possible. They don't know that anything has any value. And this comes from never having to fight for somebody, never having to fight for something, never losing something, never losing a game, never coming in last, never made to feel uncomfortable. Think of the things that truly have meaning in your life. Did they come to you easily? Think of the things that truly have meaning in your life. Were they cheap? We are living in a right before you get to the cashier, what do you call it? Place where it's just all the candy. I feel like that's what life is to Americans right now. I want that. Yeah, I'm just gonna throw that in there too. Without all the shopping, without having to make the list, without having to pull it in the car or anything else, it's right there. I want it. I'm going to grab it. And if I can't pay for it, don't worry. I've got a card for everything. Have you ever bought anything in the checkout counter, on the checkout line, that had meaning? That you in the end cherished? That you wanted to pass on? Nothing. This is happening to us because we're trying to make life comfortable. And there is no meaning in all comfort. Life is uncomfortable. Life requires endurance. Endurance implies there's tough times. And we're trying to take those things away from everyone. And it's what's making our life meaningless. You know, in America, we think that we can protest and ban and tear down and rip up and legislate our way out of anything bad or anything uncomfortable. We're going to find a way. Biloxi School District just banned the books To Kill a Mockingbird. Now, they've just banned that from the 8th grade curriculum. The students were in the middle of studying it, and the school board vice president said there were parents that were complaining about it because there's language in this book that makes people uncomfortable. We can teach them the same lesson in another way that's not uncomfortable. What? Wait, what? Thomas the Tank? Hey, here's Thomas. He's going to talk about racism. He's going to talk about lynching. It should make you uncomfortable. Life is really pretty easy. People are complex. We should understand that the world is very complex because there are billions of people in it. Racial injustice in the early 20th century America should make you uncomfortable. How's that not a good way to tell your children? Do you know, have you ever read the Grimm's fairy tales? Have you ever read the actual fairy tales? They're not happy. Hansel and Gretel don't make it out of the house. I mean, why were they written that way? To teach children that life is brutal unless you pay attention. I don't know what you're going to do in Biloxi if you're in that area. Call the school district, but in a respectful manner, suggest that they stop cowering to the tyranny and have some common sense. Teach our children that life is uncomfortable. The uncomfortability of struggle is what gives your life meaning. Ask anyone. Their fondest memories, most likely when they just got married and they were struggling to make it. Why? Because they learned so much. We're getting tired, but we're tired because we're fighting and it doesn't seem like anything has any meaning. We're fighting. Look how hard we have fought since September 11th for our country. And all the people that we put our faith in, it doesn't look like they actually meant it. So you're tired because you feel like you didn't do anything of meaning. But you did. You're just not seeing it. You're not seeing it. You changed the lives of your children. There's nothing more important than that. I'd like to point out that, you know, studying To Kill a Mockingbird promotes the exact kind of virtues and conversation that we are in desperately need of today. Also, school district in Biloxi, you might also know that generations of Americans have studied To Kill a Mockingbird, and somehow or another, we have all managed to survive our uncomfortableness. There is this movement in America into one giant pansy pillow line safe space. There's no such thing as a safe space. I was teaching in church a couple of months ago, and I asked, I was teaching actually during the week, I was teaching the young adults, the 16, 17, 18 year olds, said, tell me what sanctuary means. Why did people, you saw Hunchback of Notre Dame, the Disney cartoon, why was Esmeralda always screaming sanctuary, sanctuary? Because the church was a safe space. Wait a minute, safe space. Was it a safe space? Is church supposed to be a safe space? No. Church should be a predictable place. But church should be the place where you come. It's a hospital, man. It's where you come and you're struggling. And somebody will tell you the truth. Not make you feel better, but tell you the truth. And here's the truth. It's really not that hard. It's really simple. You follow just a few simple rules. And you work hard. And you question with boldness. And you don't accept excuses from yourself. And you stop looking for safe spaces. We would have never gone to the moon because the moon is not a safe space. We would have never, ever gone into space because it's chilly, I hear. We would have never, ever come to America. I know half the country seemingly would be happy about that. But look at the blessings of America. We would never explore the highest mountains. We would most likely never get married or have children. Because think of the heartache that you have endured because you fell in love. Think of the heartache you endured because you had a child. Would you change that for anything? That heartache is, those are stripes I am proud to wear. Because those children gave my life meaning. Tanya's from the Northeast, my wife, in case you haven't met. She loves this time of year. There's a painting that hangs in our bathroom because I can't stand to see it anyplace else. I painted it for her in 2000. And I had to send her home. It was right before September 11th, so it was actually 2001. It was right before September 11th. She had so missed her family and sent her home. And she misses the trees up in New England when we were living in Florida. She just missed the trees. And every fall, these colors would happen, and she would pine for it. Pro Flowers knows that there are people like that, and they have something that will help them get through the fall. The fall colors, the best-selling cinnamon cider roses are a great option for a birthday, an anniversary, or just because somebody in your life really misses the colors. Go with one of the classics like the 100 Autumn Blooms or a Dozen Autumn Roses, and you can't lose now, no matter which you pick, because 20% off of any ProFlower unique bouquet of $29 or more is happening now. ProFlowers, their bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back, and you control the delivery date. ProFlowers, they'll give you more bloom for your buck, big, beautiful flowers, more stems for your money, and long-lasting freshness. Get 20% off all of their bouquets of $29 or more. Go to proflowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. That's proflowers.com, promo code Glenn.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Charlie Daniels is going to be joining us in just a little while. He'll be in studio with us, and he's 80 now. He's just written a new book, and it's fascinating. Fascinating. We'll talk to him coming up in just a little while. You know, talking about our friends who have had, attempt at suicide in their family, and just the weekend before, a friend of mine, Delilah, the radio host, Delilah, her son committed suicide. It's a scary thing, and it is happening more and more. And you'd have to ask why. Why? There's something sick inside of us. There's something that is missing from inside of us.
It's probably, these circumstances are, different, and suicide has been happening forever, so it doesn't include everything. But maybe the increase in what we're feeling, I think, is lack of a connection to anything deeper,
real,
anything foundational.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a lot easier to get into these situations where crazy things happen when everything is a of the moment decision, when everything changes you from one thing to another. You're happy one day, you're sad the next day. Obviously, this is separate from a clinical depression situation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I mean, just talking about how we make decisions without that foundation, without those principles, life is crazy.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I warn you, I'm going to take you to a very uncomfortable, non-safe zone commentary here. I apologize that some people may feel uncomfortable with the truth. This is a speech given by a guy named Dr. Rick Rigsby. He's a journalist, author, and a doctor. But that's not the most important thing about him. He gave the commencement speech at California State University Maritime Academy, and I want you to listen to what he said about the wisest man he ever met.
I want to share something with you. The wisest man I ever met in my life never made it past the third grade. Impacted tremendously me and my brother growing up right here in Vallejo. This was our family. This academy was our backyard. Going on that training ship and getting lost, sneaking into the pool, going to all the different places for nearly 30 years, this was home. And I want to tell you, I know what it takes to get where you are, and I need you to listen to me very carefully. I have 4 degrees. My brother is a judge. We're not the smartest ones in our family. It's a third grade dropout daddy. A third grade dropout daddy who was quoting Michelangelo when he was a cook at Cal Maritime, saying to us, boys, I won't have a problem if you aim high and miss, but I'm going to have a real issue if you aim low and hit.
So here's his father, who was a cook at this university years ago, had to drop out of his out of school because his family had been hit hard and he needed to help, you know, grow food and help at the house. But his education he fought for. And listen to how he reared these kids.
Be kind to people. He always told us kind deeds are never lost. I get to do a lot of NFL chapels. You see some amazing things with those National Football League players. You see guys that can bench press 200, 300 pounds 20 times. You see folks that are huge, that can run like a deer. You see folks from a flat-footed position jump 40 inches, 40-inch vertical leap. I even saw a white guy do it once. But the point... You know what stops me in my tracks? When I see one of those rich folks show kindness. It literally stops the world. George Washington Carver said, when common people do common things in uncommon ways, they command the attention of the world. I just described your grandmother. I know you're tough. I know you're seaworthy, but always remember to be kind. Always. Don't ever forget that. Never embarrass mama. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. If daddy ain't happy, don't nobody care. But, you know, I'm trying to tell you.
So there's a couple of things that happen politically that you should be aware of. First of all, Sessions is getting this story speaks volumes about people on the left and how the media on the left view people on the right.
9 months into his tenure as the nation's top law enforcement official, the nuances of Jeff Sessions' civil rights policy are coming into focus. As a senator from Alabama, Mr. Sessions had spoken out against same-sex marriage and voted against expanding federal hate crimes to protect transgender people. And civil rights groups were livid when President Trump nominated him to be attorney general. They predicted he would reverse policies on discrimination, police abuses, and other areas. In many ways, Mr. Sessions has fulfilled those predictions. However, the Justice Department has dispatched an experienced federal hate crimes lawyer to Iowa to help prosecute a man charged with murdering a transgender high school student last year, a highly unusual move that officials say was personally initiated by Attorney General Jeff Sessions. The man seems to care about prosecuting murders.
And that's unbelievable.
Who could have possibly predicted this? Because this is not a white person. This is not a white, straight Christian male he's going after.
I thought that's all he was going to support.
That's all I thought he cared about. I knew he was against murder, but I thought it was only for murder of white Christian males. That was my understanding.
Wow.
And now here he
is. That's what we voted for, wasn't it?
I thought so.
Yeah.
The case is terrible, of course. A 16-year-old in Burlington, Iowa, was shot to death in March 2016. Mm. Friends and family told local newspapers that he was gay. He identified as both male and female and occasionally went by a female name. The Justice Department lawyer will serve as a county prosecutor in the case. And I guess this is one of those situations legally that is very odd, right? You don't normally apply these sorts of resources to individual murder cases. And what they're saying here basically is that seemingly Jeff Sessions is interested in applying the law to individual cases when they show real merit. And he is not embracing the wider sort of systemic ideas where you're going to change laws to try to prevent these things in a larger sense. He's taking each case as individual cases, but he's just as passionate of prosecuting and maybe even more passionate in prosecuting a transgendered person getting murdered than the typical evil white Christian male. It's a pretty interesting story because the New York Times here, I would say it reads as they're sort of giving him credit, like, wow, he actually seems to give a crap about transgender people.
What does that say about us?
I know.
What does that say about the New York Times and how they view people who disagree with them? For instance, gay marriage. I'm for gay marriage because I'm a libertarian. I don't think the government should be involved in marriage at all. I get no value at all from a piece of paper issued by the government.
Yeah, but what about your town councilman? When they know you're married, you feel real. You're like, wow, they recognize me. They know my love life, and I feel great about that, right?
However, at the same time, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman, and that's what my faith teaches me. But I don't care what you do. Don't tell me and my church what I have to do, and I'm not going to tell you what you have to do. Keep it out of the federal government and government. It has no place there. That is between you and God, or you and a tree, or you and whatever. It doesn't matter. That's your business. And I know, I'm guessing, that that is what Jeff Sessions is thinking, or was thinking when he was against gay marriage. There's also something else that comes into play on this, and that is, it was a slippery slope. It was to open the door for almost anything. And if you don't believe that, look at what's happening. It was to be able to persecute people who don't believe in gay marriage. And if you don't believe that, let me introduce you to a baker in Colorado, a baker in Oregon, a photographer in New Mexico. What happened to their right? We don't need additional laws. And we don't need, I can't understand. If somebody kills you, there's a higher level? If they're killing you, intentionally killing you, because they didn't like the color of your skin, or they didn't like that you were a liberal or a conservative or gay or straight or Christian or Muslim, there's additional crime to that? Shouldn't the highest problem that we have in our society is the murder, the hatred that's so deep, and it could be just because, you know, you've been jilted, but you gave into your hatred that was so deep that you thought the only way this can be cured is by killing another person. Why do I need a hate crime for that?
Yeah. In the story, it says something like, Mr. Sessions opposed rules that turned attacks against transgendered people based on their sexuality. It made those into a crime. It's like, no, attacks were already a crime.
Like,
they're already a criminal action.
You kill this kid for any reason. For any reason.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, this is an exceptional reason, but it just shows, you know, how crazy people can become. And by not listening to each other, by not talking to each other. I was in a meeting yesterday morning in our church council, and we were going over the New Testament, and I kept getting hung up on one place, and I ended up not listening, and I should have. But I got hung up in a place in 1 Peter where he's talking about, you know, the lively stones. And if you understand the way things were written and why things were written the way they were in the Bible, you know that bricks are people that are all made by somebody powerful into being exactly alike. It's why the Israelis or the Israelites were making bricks. I mean, that story, they're making bricks because they're all slaves. They're all the same. They're interchangeable. One dies, it doesn't matter. Go get another one. But God created all of us as stones. We're all unique. And it doesn't matter. It is human nature. And it is the worst part of our human nature. It is the part that is, quite honestly, the enemy of man and the enemy of God. That part of our human nature that wants everyone else to believe and be just like we want them to be. That doesn't work. It doesn't work in marriage. It doesn't work in life. It doesn't work in society. We are all stones. We're all different. And we say we should celebrate our differences, but I don't think the people who say that actually believe that. Because if you're different, if you believe something else, you don't even want to talk to them. They don't want to talk to you. You don't want to talk to them. Well, how are we going to get anywhere? If there was a spaceship going to Mars and Elon Musk said, okay, we're going to put 1,000 people on this spaceship. It's a big spaceship. Have you seen his? We're going to put 1,000 people on this, and this is going to restart Earth. It's going to it is going to be the seed that we take the best of humanity and we're going to put it up on Mars so it can be another human colony. Would we include, would we just take scientists? If this was going to restart us, would we just take scientists? Would we just take people who are rocket scientists or believe all in one thing? Or would we also say, you know, if we're going to really have a human society, we should bring some painters along and a couple of people who can write and play music. We should take some artists with us, maybe a poet or two.
Noah brought the duck-billed platypus along.
Right.
I mean, right. You didn't just bring the good animals.
Right. we need all of it. We need all of it. And somehow or another, all of us have to learn how to get along.
Duck-billed platypus is actually my favorite animal, so I don't want to disparage it. But I mean, just
is there a reason
out.
Why?
I always loved it. It's just a weird freaking thing. And they just threw a duck bill on this furry weird. I don't know what the heck it is. I've always loved it though, and you know, I don't want to disparage it, but it's true, right? Like you didn't just have the cute animals didn't make it on the ark. It brought all of them. We need to bring some stupid people on that spaceship as well.
You need the... Well, I don't know about that.
No, you need a bunch of adults on that thing.
You need...
Just to annoy people.
You know, life needs the predators. Look what happened in... what's it called? Yellowstone. When they wanted to take the wolf out of Yellowstone. Do you remember that? You're not old enough. They took the wolf out of Yellowstone and shipped them all to Canada. And they said, this is going to be great. No, it totally destroyed the balance of nature. They actually had to go reintroduce the wolf. They had to go up in Canada and catch them and then reintroduce them.
Is this the where they put like 13 wolves back into the park and it like totally changed
everything
for the good?
Yes. You
can't better.
You need all of the animals. Anyway, Casper has outdone themselves again. Tanya and I, one of the first to have the new Wave mattress from Casper, and I love it. They have collected 3 years of data, feedback, foam research, and sleep science in creating the Wave. It features a patent-pending support system that mirrors your body's natural curvature, gives you a deeper, more restorative sleep. Casper, the Wave, new top layer that's incredibly soft, doesn't get in the way of you experiencing the support below. And like the original, it's designed with breathable foam, so you'll sleep cool year-round. Casper, the Wave mattress. Complete breakthrough in sleep from the leading designers and engineers in the field. And that's why it's in high demand, so try it in your own home quickly for 100 nights, risk-free. If you don't love it, they'll come and pick it up and 100% money back. Free shipping, free returns, Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. You could save $75 on your purchase at Casper.com if you use the promo code Beck. Minimum purchase was required. See site for details. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Quite excited. Charlie Daniels has a new book out. Never look at the empty seats. The story of Charlie Daniels' life. He's just turned 80. He's remarkable, and there's a lot of wisdom in Charlie Daniels. I don't want to talk to him about. I do want to talk to him about his past and the legends that he has met, met with and been around, and the influences on his life. But I also want to talk to him about just finding your way. He's led a remarkable life, starting with his childhood. Charlie Daniels, next.
Glenn Beck.
One of the great things about having Blue Apron is I get to be a delicious food Santa Claus every once in a while. Because, you know, every once in a while I had a couple things planned during the week and I don't get to every Blue Apron meal that they send me. And I get to give them away. For example, my aunt, who I went to go see the other day, made a delicious flatbread pizza thing with these mushrooms. And it looked amazing. She sent me pictures of it. She loved it. And these meals are incredible. People don't know how easy these are to make. For less than $10 per person per meal, Blue Apron delivers these delicious recipes with pre-portioned ingredients to make these delicious home-cooked meals. And there's incredible things coming up all the time. A lot of ingredients you might not typically put in something, but you get to make them. They're gourmet meals, and you're the hero of the household. Check out this week's menu and get $30 off your first meal with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/stew. blueapron.com/stew. It's a better way to cook.
Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
This morning, exhausted doctors are struggling to keep their eyes open. They are frantically attending screaming patients, many burned beyond recognition, who are continuously entering and exiting the hospital like a horrific revolving door. These are victims of a double truck bombing that occurred Saturday in a crowded street in Mogadishu. The deadly attack in Somalia, 300 lives and still counting. This is sub-Saharan Africa, and it has not seen this level of violence since 1998 when they bombed the U.S. embassy. The Somali government is blaming Al-Qaeda, Al-Shabaab, an extremist group, for the bloodshed. The Shabaab, which once controlled most of the cities, lost their territory in the area thanks to the Somali army and American counterterrorism operations. However, it is still a deadly threat to the people of Somalia, and hundreds of people have been killed and wounded in the attacks on the capital this year alone. The Somali president said, "This attack proves our enemy will stop at nothing to cause our people pain and suffering. Let's unite against terror. Time to unite and pray together. The terror won't win." I want to bring you a quick message. The terror won't and can't win. The good guys always win in the end. And Shabaab, they're not good guys. We will always be changing and challenging evil that is spread out worldwide. But we and the good people in Somalia, the good people in Europe, the good people in Asia should take comfort that good wins in the end. And our prayers go out to the people of Somalia today.
Monday, October 16th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Charlie Daniels is in studio, and I just was having a chat with him, and I said, I can't believe I'm sitting with Charlie Daniels, and, and he knows my name. How are you, Charlie?
I'm good, buddy. Good to be with you. It's an honor.
Yeah. You haven't changed a bit. I can't believe you're 80.
Yeah, I'll be 81. 28th of this month, I'll be 81.
Unbelievable.
81 years old.
You don't look it at all.
Well, thank you very much.
You have had a remarkable life.
Oh, I have. I've had a great life. I wouldn't trade lives with anybody. I've done what I want to do for a living for almost 60 years now, exactly what I want to do for a living, and that's a blessing.
And I will tell you, your book is, by the way, really good, and it's full of God and blessings, mm-hmm. and I want to talk to you about it. But the one thing that I didn't know is, at any point did you think, maybe God doesn't want me to play the fiddle or play the guitar because you lost a finger and you're graduating? Your arms were almost pulled off,
yes,
from an auger.
Uh-huh. I never thought that. I thought he wanted me to get up and go on. You know, get up and just beat it and get on with the program. I did lose a finger in high school, but I lost it on my right hand. If it had been my left hand, it had been the end of my career, because that's the one I pushed the strings down with, a chord with. But since I just used my other hand, my right hand to hold a fiddle bow and a guitar pick, I was okay. My arm, the other, that got tangled up in a post hole digger. It's like an auger that digs post holes in the ground, and my arm literally got wrapped up in it. I had the bone out through the skin in a couple of places, and it was broken completely in two and three places. And I never went, you know, if a tractor, a lot of times, even after you turn it off, it'll hit another lip.
Yeah.
If it had done that, it would pull my arm off probably. And I remember being down on my knees, and I said, "Help me, Lord." And the guy that had the tractor, when the tractor, he cut it up, and it stopped. And he unwound my arm and took me to the hospital and get it put back together. But
that was the year. That was 1980. That was
1980.
The year,
that was the hottest
height of your career.
Hottest time of my career. We had just done double, went down to Georgia. And we'd take about 4 months off. Most frustrating time of my life.
Oh, I bet it was.
But I learned something. I learned during that 4 months, I did nothing. And when I got back on my feet again and really started, you know, where I could move around, I was in such terrible condition. I could only walk about 100 yards. And I said, "This ain't going to do." And I started walking 110 yards and 120 yards. And so anyway, I worked up to where I was, you know, doing a good level of exercise. And I have maintained that ever since then. So I think I needed that time in my life to reassess taking care of myself.
Yeah.
And I've tried to do that a lot better since then.
So in 1980, you are at your height. Devil Went Down to Georgia. I mean, it's crazy. The record industry is still the record industry.
Yeah.
And then things start to soften and your ticket prices go down.
Right.
And you realize, not only are we not rolling in the cash, I owe $2 million.
That's right. That's another lesson I learned. I kind of let that happen over a period of time. And I got involved in a lot of businesses I should not have been involved in that were peripheral things to the music business, but that I knew nothing about. And the first thing I knew, we were $2 million in debt. And I said, "We have got to do something about this." And we took a lot of dates back then in every old smoky type place you can find just for a payday, just to keep the payments up. And I said my prayers and put on my hat and my boots and picked up my guitar and my fiddle, and we hit the road. And the day that we got our debts paid off, we have an annual Christmas party with our company, with our employees, and we took the notes out in the yard and burned them. Wow. Which was very symbolic to me. I was so glad to get rid of them. But yeah, that was another lesson I learned.
It's a different way of looking at the world, because I mean, now I feel like when people struggle and they have these problems, they're blaming other people. They're having they want other people to step in and cover their losses. You thought, maybe if I just work my butt off.
Well, it's my fault. You know, I'll take responsibility for my actions. I have to.
What language are you speaking?
Yeah, again, this is, you can tell how old he is just by that statement.
Well, you know, I think you're a miserable person if you're going to blame everything on somebody else. You have no control over your life.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. You want to see your enemy, go look in the mirror. Start there, and then you kind of work your way around and find out what the rest of the problems are. But basically, I'll take responsibility for most all the bad things that ever happened to me. The good things are blessings of God. The bad things are my fault.
Yeah. If there's one person I could go back in time and meet, they would be the only man I ever saw my grandfather stand up and give a standing ovation to when he walked out on stage, and it was Johnny Cash.
Wow, yeah. Johnny Cash was bigger than life. And when he walked in a room, I mean, he just, you just could not ignore him. When I first went to Nashville in 67, I was just another young man with a guitar that showed up the music business to try to make it in the business, in Music City to try to make it in the business. And you don't run into many superstars at that stage of your career, but I did run into him several times around town. And he didn't know who I was. It didn't make any difference who you were. It was like every time you'd see him, it was a handshake and, "How you doing, man? How's it going?" And yak, yak, and back and forth. I'm standing there with my mouth open and saying, "I'm talking to Johnny Cash." I worked for a guy that used to produce Johnny Cash, a guy named Bob Johnston, and I'd run an errand for him once in a while. I'd take a tape to Johnny or something, you know, and usually all he had to do was spank a kid and walk on off, but he didn't do that. He always took time to be conversational. I'll never in my life forget what that meant to me and what an encouragement it was. And your granddad had good taste.
He did.
He honored great man.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I remember being, up to his knee. And I remember seeing, it was at a state fair, and I remember seeing the bus pull up to the back and this guy in black get out, and he walked out, and my grandfather stood up erect and gave him a standing ovation. And I remember not looking at the stage. I remember looking up at my grandfather and seeing his face of admiration of him.
Oh, he was great man, no doubt about it. Great artist, great man. You know, they did a thing, it's called the top 40 all-time country music men or something like that. Yeah. I can't remember the exact title of it, but I thought Hank Williams would come in at number one. Number one was Johnny Cash.
Yeah. Who out of all of the people, I mean, you've worked with everyone and you've been around everybody. I mean, you're what, in 1973, you're with Ringo Starr and they're joking about you want to be in the Beatles. I mean, what are the, who made the lasting impression on you? Who is the one that you learned the most from?
You know, we go back to the Johnny Cashes and those, but of course, Johnny, you had to admire Johnny Cash. He overcomes so many adversities in his life, and he just kept going. And the greatest thing ever happened to Johnny Cash was June Carter, because she was such an influence on his life. But as far as who impressed me was concerned, I came along, when I came along, it was bluegrass. It was Flat and Scruggs and Bill Monroe and Reno and Smiley, and I didn't want to hear nothing else. That's all I wanted to hear. And about the time Elvis came along, he made it possible for country boys to play rock music. Before then, it was big horn sections and, you know, the that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Elvis come up with two guitars and a bass and drums and started playing rock music. And everybody said, I want to do that, you know. I remember, Glenn, when I was in, I think I was a senior in high school, and we'd taken a trip down to Silver Springs, Florida. We were touring around as a, you know, school trip. I remember seeing a great big placard. And it was a big country music package show, and it was the Lubin Brothers and Hank Snow and yada-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and down at the bottom, in type about the size of almost like typewriter print, it said Jimmy Rogers Snow and Elvis Presley. And nobody knew who he was. First time I ever heard him, I hated him. He was on the Midnight Jamboree, the Ernest Tubb Midnight Jamboree that comes on after the Grand Ole Opry, and he sang Blue Moon of Kentucky. And it was I was a Bill Monroe fanatic, and this guy sang one of Bill Monroe's signature songs, and he sang it in that, you know how he sang it.
Yeah.
And I thought, who the hell? I'll never hear from him again. That's the last thing he'll ever do. It took him, on that tour I was talking about, it took him all of about 2 weeks to become the most popular thing on the tour. Nobody could follow him. It got to where they'd go in there, but start on Elvis, and you know, Hank Snow, who was a great big artist at the time. Lubin Brothers were big artists at the time, but everybody wanted to hear this new guy that nobody had ever heard of named Elvis.
We're with Charlie.
Oh, and he was a big influence on me, that's what I was going
to
say.
We're talking to Charlie Daniels. The name of the book is Never Look at the Empty Seats. A couple of other things I want to talk to him about, and we'll continue our conversation here in a second. From the October 1st Business Insider, legendary investor Jim Rogers had this to say in regards to fear, gold, and the sector to be bullish on. He said, quote, everyone should own coins, physical coins, as an insurance policy and as an emergency. If nothing else, you hope you never need them. But you got to start by owning gold coins, coins that are recognized all over the world. History has proven time and time again that it always returns to gold. There's something else that I just read about this weekend in Puerto Rico. Nobody thought of this. They have no power. They have no power. You also have no cash. Everything is digitized. You might want to have some cash on hand and be able to have something of real value that is lasting. The world always returns to gold. Durable, easy to transport, looks the same everywhere. Weight, grade, in short, it is the insurance against a catastrophe. Call 866-GOLDLINE right now and find out about their price guarantee program. Also read their important risk information. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
The legendary Charlie Daniels is with us. Name of his book, Never Look at the Empty Seats. We have time. I got to get him to tell that story in the book on why he named it that. It's a great, great lesson. Charlie, I was impressed by what you talked about with your dad. Mm-hmm. And describing your dad. Yeah. In some ways, I'm an alcoholic, and you described me in many ways. Your dad was not a wino. When you think of alcoholic, you think of a washed up
stumble bum.
Yeah.
Yeah. My dad was probably one of the top five people in pine timber in the Southeast. He could look at a pine tree, he could tell you what kind of pole or pilot it would make, how many feet of lumber it would make. And his millions of dollars changed hands on nothing more than his word. He would go cruise a tract of timber, he'd come back and say, this is worth so many thousands of dollars. And they just paid it for it because they knew his word was good. He had this problem with alcohol. And it truly is a sickness. Mm-hmm. And he would go for as long as 5 years, never touch a drop of liquor. But he always said, I'm one drink away from a drunk.
Yeah.
If I take the first one, I'm finished. And somehow, some way, he would take that first one. It was like several weeks of, you know, to get straightened out. He would lose jobs. But he always had a job waiting for him because he's just that good. Even people that he'd worked for before that had fired him would hire him back again. So my point was what I was trying to get the point across, and that's what was a hard thing for me to talk about, because usually when you say alcoholic, somebody thinks about some stumble bum, mm-hmm. you know, walking around looking for a money to borrow from somebody to get another drink. My dad wasn't that way at all. He was always loving. He always took care of his family. He was very responsible. You know something, Glenn? I used to go to AA meetings with him, and I met a lot of alcoholics. I have never seen one sorry alcoholic. I've seen a lot of sorry old drunks. But, I mean, literally, people that I met at his meetings, I mean, they were businessmen. They were responsible people that had that problem, you know, that had that alcoholic problem. So
if you can beat it, it gives you quite perspective on life. I mean, some of the best people I've ever met are alcoholics.
Yeah, there's a... I've been surprised at some people that have told me they were alcoholics. Yeah.
So, Charlie, you know, the thing that I'm searching for right now in my own life is what matters most. You know, with all of the stuff that is going on in the world and all of the things we're arguing on and bickering on and everything else, as you look back out of all the things that you have done and seen and learned, what matters most to you?
There's four things that rule my life. God, first of all. Family, secondly. My nation, my country, the way I feel about it, the way I want it to be, and my work. It's those four things. I try to concentrate on those four things. And as long as I do that, I keep a good perspective. When I start getting sidelined by something somebody else is doing or something that really aggravates me, it takes time away. I found out it takes just as much time to think a negative thought as it does think a positive thought.
Yeah.
And I try to live in a positive world. I got a lot of things that I really enjoy doing. This writing is something I didn't even know I could do.
Yeah, it's really good.
You know, I didn't know I could do it. It's just another talent God gave me that took me a long time to discover. I wrote on this book for 20 years, and I was just making notes and stuff, and all of a sudden I said, well, I'm going to make a book out of this. And I could never find a place to end it because my life went on. I didn't get invited to join the Grand Ole Opry till I was in my 70s. So interesting things kept happening, and I kept writing. And I could never find a place to end it until I was told I was going to be inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame. And I thought, what a great place to end it. So the night I was inducted, the next morning, I sat down, I wrote the ending, and I kind of backfilled where I was, and I had the book. And you asked me about the title. The title, when you're a young musician, if you're serious about it, and I was, you'll play anywhere you can for anybody that's there for anything they'll give you, and you're going to see a lot of empty seats because nobody knows who you are. But if you'll please those people, you forget the empty seats. You concentrate on the ones you accentuate the positive, as the old song says. If you concentrate on them, the next time you go back to town, those people are going to say, hey, that guy's pretty good. Hey, let's go see him, and they'll bring somebody with them. That's how you build a following. And I keep trying to tell these young guys this, you know, all the time. When you walk on that stage, you give them the best you got. if your dog died, if your girlfriend left you, whatever the heck happened, they didn't pay. That's not the ticket price. They deserve a show. Go give them a show. So that's what the title's about.
You, my father was about your age. He would be probably 85 or 86 now if he were alive. And he said to me, you know, I've seen a lot of things in my life. Didn't expect that we would ever go to the moon when I was growing up. And he said, I'm glad my time is past because I worry about how you're going to navigate the future. Do you worry that?
Well, I have a son. I only got one boy. He's 53 years old. And he's got a pretty good handle on it. Now, the grandkids, I don't know how this. I would literally hate to grow up in the world.
Yeah.
Nowadays, because it's a world. Glenn, I don't understand the world anymore. I don't understand how it works. I don't understand what motivates people. I feel that a lot of people in this country either don't know or don't care where we came from and how we got here.
Yeah.
And the blood that was shed and the sacrifices that were made to get us to where we are. Now, I'm an old World War II guy. I remember the day Pearl Harbor was bombed.
Wow.
My city that I came from, Wilmington, North Carolina, is a seaport town. We had oil tankers and cargo boats that went across the ocean, you know, to service our troops. And they were sunk, several of them, just off our beaches by German U-boats that were out there. So we took the war very seriously. And I learned, and I say this on stage every night, only two things protect America. It's the grace of Almighty God and the United States military. And
Charlie, I love you.
Love you too.
Thank you so much. The name of the book is Never Look at the Empty Seats. Well worth the price of admission. Charlie Daniels.
Thank you.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So, Dana Loesch had a tweet storm this weekend. Spent my weekend preparing to move due to repeated threats from gun control advocates. One guy hunted down my private cell phone number, called when the police were here, threatened to shoot me in my front yard. Another guy created a string of social media accounts, posted photos of my house, threatened to rape me to death. Another gun control advocate, after threatening to hunt me down and assault me, dragged my kids into it. I'm grateful that my kids' school work with law enforcement and private security to ensure campus safety and work with me. I've only ever discussed these issues kind of vaguely. More I can't discuss. I and other Second Amendment women are sexually threatened regularly. I'm not sad, just determined. Maybe someday people will drop the ideological boundaries and not cherry pick concern. Maybe someday.
It's really comforting to find out how inclusive, diverse, and loving the left is.
Pat Gray joins us.
It's good to see it. It just kind of warms the cockles of your heart. At least it would if I hadn't had my cockles removed. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Since I've had cockles.
Surgically.
Right. Yeah, surgically removed.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't come out just by wishing them out. You got to cut into it.
Yeah. Did you did you get ice cream for the week after you had your cockles removed?
I did. I had icicles.
Icicles.
Yeah.
Okay.
Popsicles.
Right.
And icicles.
And icicles.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
It was winter when I had them removed.
Right. Okay.
So they let me suck an icicle.
Right.
But it's amazing to see how these things happen when they're threats to a woman who has been defending our Second Amendment rights.
That it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
She deserves
it. They don't
no
care
one
at all.
To care.
Although they
I
don't
see,
care.
I think I saw. Did I see this correctly? That Chelsea Clinton actually responded to Dana and said, "Hey, you know, following this, and we, you know, think it's really horrible." Like she actually seemed like
if that's true. To her, I mean, that's
to her credit.
To her credit.
Yeah, I mean, but
she
I mean,
give
it's
credit
rare.
Where credit's due.
Yes, this is rare. However, and it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Well, because people just think they don't see you as human anymore. We were talking about this with Jeff Sessions.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh, he's defending somebody who killed a transgendered kid? Yes, of course he is. Of course he is.
He's prosecuting.
Yeah, prosecuting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, here we sit with Dana getting threats so bad that she has to move. And what does the left think? They don't care. She deserves
it. Not at all. Yeah, they don't care. It's, you know, and she's a woman. And right now, supposedly, they're all concerned about women's rights. And if it had been a black conservative, they wouldn't be black enough, and they'd be screaming about you're not really a black person. You're a sellout. You just, if you're a minority or a woman, you just can't have that position.
Yeah, and this was her tweets storm was in response to this Me Too campaign, which is essentially people say, you know, now that Harvey Weinstein's in the news and there's all sorts of sexual assault, women are coming and confessing their stories about when they've been sexually harassed at work.
And not by
Me Too.
Not by necessarily Harvey Weinstein.
No, yeah, by their own Harvey Weinstein, they keep saying. It's an interesting thing where, like, the left is saying that this is a big issue, and obviously, certainly with Weinstein it is, and this is obviously more widespread than just that. But at the same time, they're fighting to take women's ability to defend themselves away. Mm-hmm. I mean, if anything, if you understand the society as one that is rampant with sexual assault by predators that are much stronger than women, isn't this a great time to argue for Second Amendment rights for women? They should be able to defend themselves more easily. Maybe they should be able to defend themselves with firearms in these situations, and maybe less of them would happen.
Especially when Weinstein allegedly raped at least three of them.
Yeah, and I think four now. I think at least four.
Have you seen the list? It is
long.
Staggering.
Well, yeah. It sounds like virtually everybody. I mean, everybody who came in his office he tried to get with.
I mean, it's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's all these... there was the Courtney Love thing we played earlier.
Can we play 2005. That again, please?
Do we have that any...
This is 2005. Tell me, you know, Hillary Clinton on the BBC over the weekend saying, I had no idea. I've never even heard these rumors.
Right.
2005. Listen to this.
Hi, Comedy Central. Do you have any advice for a young girl moving to Hollywood?
I'll get lively with us. Harvey Weinstein invites you to a private party in the Four Seasons.
Harvey Weinstein invites you to a private party at his hotel room in the Four Seasons. Don't go. I mean, that's 2005.
Wow. That's as clear as you could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
Well, and it's one person after another.
Yeah.
And they've said it at the Oscars. They've said it at the Emmys. There have been jokes about it on primetime TV shows.
No, they did not make jokes.
They did make jokes.
No, cannot joke about this.
Wait a minute. Hang on just a second. Wait. Weren't you just last week saying, along with the rest of society, how dare them avoid all jokes on Saturday Night Live and everything else?
All the late night shows. They weren't joking about this. They would not joke about this last week, and that was wrong. And now you can't joke about this because that would be wrong.
The Al Michaels thing is unbelievable.
Here, play Al Michaels, please.
Manning throws, and then is knocked down by Bradley Roby. I mean, let's face it, the Giants are coming off a worse week than Harvey Weinstein. And they're up by 14 points.
Come on.
Only my L.A. guy comes up with that
Well,
one.
You know.
There you go.
All you have to do is read the papers. Any paper.
I'm sorry. Not
that
only
is
that
completely
a funny
harmless.
Joke,
that's a good joke.
That's
a
great
joke.
It's a good joke. It's a nice current reference.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's tying it. He's the best in the business.
Yeah.
And he knows how to do this without being offensive. That's not offensive.
It's not offensive at all.
But later in the game, this happened.
Back in Denver. Sorry, I made a reference earlier before. So I'd be a little flip about somebody obviously very much in the news all over the country. It was not meant in that manner.
Stop it.
So my apologies. Good. And we'll just leave it at that. We'll leave it there.
Move on.
Yep.
Oh, sorry, Al. You can't leave it at that. We're going to persecute you until you're drummed out of your position. Now, we're just going to yell and scream about it until you just can't announce games anymore.
I mean, it's ridiculous.
You know they're going to do that.
Are people arguing that Harvey Weinstein had a good week? Like, I don't know. Is there an argument to be made for that? I don't think so.
And what if they had joked about it on Saturday Night Live? That would be cool.
Yeah,
they did joke. They did joke about it on Saturday
Night Live. Did they finally this weekend?
Yeah, they did.
They finally did.
Wow. They did.
And then James Corden as well. James Corden came out and made, if you have that audio, he made some jokes about Harvey Weinstein as well. And now
he's sacred. He's sacred.
Is he?
Yes.
No, he's
not. No,
he's not.
I thought it was the opposite.
No,
James Corden isn't sacred?
I don't know.
Listen.
Right here in L.A., it's so beautiful, Weinstein has already asked tonight up to his hotel to give him a massage.
They're all like groaning.
I don't know whether that groan was that you like that joke or you don't like that joke. If you don't like that joke, you should probably leave now. It has been weird this week, though, hasn't it? Watching Harvey Weinstein in hot water. Ask any of the women who watched him take a bath. It's weird watching Harvey Weinstein in hot water. Harvey Weinstein wanted to come tonight, but he'll settle for whatever potted plant is closest.
Come on now.
These are fantastic jokes.
That's funny. I don't care who you are. That's great funny jokes.
It doesn't mean, I mean, if anything, it means it shows that we care more and we're taking this very seriously. That is one way you take something seriously is completely mock it to death.
It's how we deal with things.
Yes.
It's how you kind of get through these trying times is joking about it.
I'm so tired of the word and feeling police. I can't take it.
I know.
I mean, do you remember a time when we said back in the 90s, this political correctness stuff has got to stop because there will be a time where you can't say anything.
Welcome to that time.
Welcome to it. And if I could just remind you of what everybody said. Oh, don't be ridiculous, you and your slippery slope analogy.
Yeah. The slippery slope has a name because it's a really good observation.
you start to go down a hill and then you slip and go all the way down to the bottom.
Yeah, it doesn't always happen. There's a lot of times that people are worried about slippery slopes when it doesn't get there. But with speech right now, it's bizarre.
Yeah, the problem is there's no more slopes. We're down all of them.
We're down at the bottom of every one of them.
No. Woody Allen said this weekend he hopes that you can still wink at a woman in the office.
Oh my gosh! I hope you can't do that.
I hope so. No, that's dumb.
Well, you can't even look at a woman in the office.
But wait a minute! I read that and I thought, why would you be winking at a woman in the office? Why? Why would you be doing that? You're like looking at them, going,
"Hey, baby,
hey, baby." That's what a wink says. Unless you're in on a joke,
right,
and you're like, "Yeah, Bob, you haven't heard." Yeah, the whole neighborhood where you live in burned down. Wink, wink.
The dude's married to his daughter, so he's not the right messenger for this particular point.
It's gotten to the point where you can't marry your daughter. Are we really at that place?
But I think what he's saying here is that there is a slope, right, where... and we're seeing this. We had some stuff pulled from the web. Maybe we'll do this later in the week. But where it's going to be impossible, like in Woody Allen's world, right? Winking is an old timey way that you flirt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And can you flirt?
Hang on, can I just ask? Does anyone wink anymore? No, is that a flirt? So. Is that something that people are like?
I don't think I've winked since 1981.
It's very creepy and weird.
It's weird. Yeah. It's weird.
But I mean, again, this is a guy who's married to his daughter, so he probably thinks this is the right thing to do.
Yes. He's like, that's classy.
So that's the way you do it. At least. so he's going through this, and I think there is a world here, right, where you have to look at that. Because normal human interaction has to be allowed. We've seen this with the college situation, the quote unquote rape culture, that 27 out of every 8 women get raped every day. Legitimately, where we've come to a place where the president of the United States was quoting a statistic saying that the rape problem on campus is worse than the Rwandan genocide. And that is taken seriously in the media, as if that's humanly possible. It's obviously a ridiculous statistic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that has gone so far that normal interactions where the woman will even say, actually, no, I agreed with this. This was consensual. And the man will still get suspended from school and get in trouble and be labeled a sexual predator.
It's happened to a lot of people.
So the slippery slope works that way as well. And while Woody Allen is definitely not the right person to bring that argument,
it's like you can't read Goodnight Moon to your date. It's like you can't tuck her into bed while singing You Are My Sunshine.
You're snuggled up, pulling up an episode of Peppa Pig. What?
What's wrong with this world?
Pat Gray has more of that coming up on Pat Gray Unleashed in just a few moments on the Blaze Radio Network and the Blaze TV Network.
Holy cow. Anyone paying attention knows now is the time to prepare. Saying the world is unpredictable is mild. None of us have any guarantees of what tomorrow is going to bring. Honestly, if I were on the air tomorrow and I said an alien ship has just appeared over Moscow and the Russians claim to have made contact, and there's one, it looks like it's headed towards Washington, D.C. What percentage of this audience might believe it?
I believe it. I don't even know that they react. Like, oh, really? Huh. Wow.
That's a retweet.
All right, I got to move on.
Anyway, things are unpredictable, and it's not too late to start a plan. Ensuring that you're feeding your family is the beginning of being dependable. You don't want to be dependent on the government. You want to be dependable for your family. Friends having trouble. Your family having trouble. You having trouble. Having food storage for emergency situations means that you are the leader and that you don't have to deal with not being able to eat or feed your family in a crisis. My Patriot Supply gets that and is the solution. This week, you can get their 102-serving survival food kit at a special price of less than a dollar per serving at 1-800-200-7163. Or you can order online at preparewithglenn.com. It's dependable emergency food storage. The seasoned experts are at My Patriot Supply. And you can go and find all of the really good breakfast, lunch, and dinners at preparewithglenn.com or call 1-800-200-7163.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
No, this is good. Another stunning defeat for Europe. Yesterday, Austria's 31-year-old Sebastian Kurz has become the chancellor with the center-right People's Party. Here's the problem with it was the anti-immigrant nationalist Freedom Party appears to top the Social Democrats in second place. So they have moved hard right. And this when I say it's an anti-immigrant nationalist Freedom Party, freedom doesn't have a lot to do with this particular party. It was set up originally by a former SS officer from the Gestapo. And they've never had this kind of support. They are now the second biggest party in Austria and promising good things to come.
There's a party like this seemingly in every European nation right now.
Yeah,
all growing in support.
Yeah, I'm going to try to outline this for you tomorrow on tomorrow's broadcast, but they have deep ties to Russia and to all of the other Nazi parties that are happening all around, including here in the United States. There is a movement, and it is really being funneled through Russia, and it's going to destabilize and not be good. It's not be good. But
I think a lot of the coverage comes from the left, and a lot of times it sounds like they're just bashing anyone who's conservative. But these groups are different. This is not a conservative group as Americans would understand it.
No. It is the alt-right in America. It is the Nazi right in Austria and in Hungary and in Sweden now and Greece and France.
And they'll lump all this together with Daniel Hannan and the Brexit movement. It's totally different than these things.
It's not the same. More on that tomorrow on tomorrow's broadcast.
Glenn Beck.